Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual with our Sunday morning show. Our guest will be with us in a little while is an old buddy of mine and one of the country's top sports announcers, Merle Harmon, who is the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers, and we have many, many things to talk about because he's worked football and basketball and baseball and just about everything in the sports scene. So we have a lot of things to talk about. Remember, the White Sox wind up their series today with Milwaukee. The Cubs will wind up their series with the Dodgers, and you may have noticed our friend Vida Blue won again, and the Giants moved into first place in that division. They're going to be tough because they really have a tremendous pitching staff. It may be the best and most consistent pitching staff in the league. Next Sunday, we're going to talk about horse racing with the general manager of Arlington Park Racetrack, Joe Joyce. This man is one of the best-informed men on horse racing, on off-track betting. The messenger service and all the rest of this business is causing quite a controversy in Chicago, and he should be a very interesting guest. We'll be back with our guest, an old friend, Merle Harmon, in just a moment. We're delighted to have Merle Harmon as our guest today. We've been on the circuit together for many, many, many years, and he's done a great job for the Milwaukee Brewers, and they have they put together quite a hitting ball club. Merle, I know you fellows will score a lot of runs. What about the problem that you have, the Sox have, everybody has? What about pitching?
Bob, it's very general this year, isn't it? Every club has a pitching problem, and I know when we were in Baltimore earlier this year, Earl Weaver said the team that gets the pitching in the East is going to win because everybody's got power. Everybody has everything else. The Boston Red Sox, goodness knows, they have power, and the Yankees, and Baltimore has its share. The Brewers lead the league in home runs, and in fact lead the major leagues in home runs. Detroit, of course, is hitting the ball well. Everybody seems to have hitters, and I know it's been an age-old problem of pitching, but the team that comes up with three guys that can win about 17 or 18 ball games is going to do it. Whitey Herzog says the West will be won by somebody that will win less than 100 games this year because there's that kind of balance out there.
I can remember many years ago some baseball manager, general manager, wrote an article in one of the magazines that raise your boy to be a catcher. Well, today it's
isn't that the truth? Raise him to be a pitcher, because there seems to be enough catchers around. Yogi Berra loved that story too, Bob, and wasn't it true? I mean, last night when we had the rain, or I guess day before yesterday when I had the rain delay, we were watching the 1960 World Series, a replay of the World Series, and as Yogi Berra as a boy, and you looked at the guys, the catchers they had then, and I believe that's when there really was a shortage of catchers, really, really big ones. Now we seem to have Maybe Yogi and those guys told that story enough that everybody believed it. Fathers believed it and made their kids catchers. But you're right. Now they should make them pitchers.
The Milwaukee Club, you don't hear about the Milwaukee Club being spenders like you hear about Steinbrenner and Corbett and Turner and the rest of those guys. They spend a lot of money for Heisel, who I know and you know is a good ball player and a good hitter. But you know the inconsistency of it's not a one-man game. There have to be nine men on the field, and paying an outfielder like $500,000 a season is, you wonder where this thing is going to end.
You really do, Bob, and in Heisel's case, the Brewers, as you say, they don't get a lot of publicity for spending money, but Heisel is the most expensive of all of the free agents at $3.1 million. And then, of course, Bando last year was paid by the Brewers $1.6 million or something like that. But in the Brewers' case, it was more stopgap. This is not going to be a policy of their ball club. The Brewer farm system, which was very slow in developing, did not produce players that they should have produced, that the farm system should have produced by this time. After all, they finished last enough to draft high, first or second, and they should have better ball players today coming out of the farm system than they've been getting. The one thing that Harry Dalton has done since taking over the Brewer Ball Club, you talk about spending money, has really spent it in the development program. The Brewers have gone from 3 full-time scouts to 15. They're adding another farm club next year. Harry Dalton says that he wants to sign 50 ball players this year in the draft or as free agents or what have you. And I think he will. and they're spending a tremendous amount of money there because, as he says, you can sign a Heisel once in a while or another free agent, but that's only a stopgap deal. You've got to have that farm system flowing, and Bob, we all know that. It's been the same story for years and years and years, and you've seen it and have known about it as long as anyone. But this is the thing that the Brewers are spending the money on now, is the development program.
Well, that's the way to do it. And, you know, the remarkable thing is that one of the great ball clubs, Cincinnati, they're always up there. They don't have the advantage of the draft. But just look what the young ball players they have sitting on that bench.
That's true. And, you know, another club that's done that in the American League is like Boston. Now, you take a Jim Rice and a Fred Lynn, and a Jim Rice wasn't a number one draft choice because they didn't have a number one draft choice. But they obviously have had great scouts and a great development program like Cincinnati, and Cincinnati just keeps them flowing, and I really admire that club because they have not gone out to spend the big bucks, so to speak, in the free agent draft, and they haven't had to because their farm system has produced the kind of players that it takes to win and win consistently. And I think that's the answer. I mean, what you said a moment ago is so true. One guy is not going to do it. Two guys are not going to do it.
What about the Milwaukee pitching staff? How good is it?
Well, of course, it's going to be as good as Bill Travers is good, and Bill's been out for a year. He's had that very delicate arm surgery like Tommy John had. He says he's throwing the ball harder than any time since he has been in organized baseball. And when we started the season, our oldest starting pitcher in the rotation was 24 years old. With 2 years' experience in the major leagues. Three starters had less than a year in the major leagues. And when you go with four starters like that in the rotation, you're almost asking for it. Travers should give the team some stability. Since the season started, Mike Caldwell, who's knocked around a little bit and also had some arm problems over the National League and had arm surgery, has come back strong. And Mike is 28 years old, so now he's the old man of the pitching staff. Travers is 26. So George Bamberger, the Brewer manager, has said all along, if we can stay 4 to 5 games around the 500 mark until we get everybody back and healthy by the middle of July, he said we're really going to have some fun because goodness knows the Brewers can score runs. They're averaging 6 runs a game, or a little better than 6. And I know when we came out of spring training, I said, boy, we're going to have a lot of 9-7 ball games, and we might be on the losing end because we might score 6-7 runs and lose. Because the pitching just cannot stop the opposition. But Moose Haas, who was going to be the, you know, the big gun in the pitching staff, 21 years old, tore the muscle in his pitching arm near the elbow in Boston while pitching a Super Bowl game, and it came right after he'd struck out 14 Yankees in Milwaukee to beat him. And Haas will not be back till the middle of July. So the Brewers have been operating. I mean, they needed pitching desperately. Yeah. And if anybody had to get hurt, it shouldn't have been a pitcher. But unfortunately, they've had that problem.
You know, you happened to mention Tommy John. Did you read that oddity in the last time he pitched where they stole 8 bases on him and he's a left-handed pitcher? I never heard of a thing like that before.
That's very hard to believe, isn't it? Because you're looking right at the guy. But, you know, Bob, I've noticed more and more, and I don't know what it is, that runners are moving on left-handed pitchers, particularly guys who have, oh, I suppose what we would call a lazy motion, too much arm action. And this is one of the problems, has been one of the problems with the Brewers' Jerry Augustine. He's got a lot of arm action. He's a left-hander, but he can't keep guys on first. And the Brewers have been having Augie spend some time with Bobby McClure, one of the Brewer relief pitchers out of the bullpen, who probably has the greatest pickoff move of anybody in baseball. It's so close to a balk, it's unbelievable. Bob McClure's pickoff move to first is like the Oakland Raiders' defense. They hit you so late legally, it's unbelievable. I mean, just right before that whistle, bang, and that's about what McClure does in his move to first. They've actually, the supervisor of umpires, Dick Butler, had him filmed, and they have, you know, because it looks like he's balking, and in this film, in slow motion, they discovered he is not balking.
Well, that reminds me of the big argument they had when Satchel Paige was pitching, and he had that hesitation. He'd stop. Raise his arms above his head and stop.
Yes, yes, you know, yes.
And that caused quite a furor.
Well, you know, of course, how about Louis Tion? You know, when he's coming set, he sets at his head, his chin, his chest, and finally down to his waist. He goes through 4 hesitations, and he didn't have that when he started, remember? So he developed that along the line. I'll tell you what I think is going to happen, Bob, and we've got a guy doing it right now, Mike Caldwell. Mike Caldwell has developed a hesitation. He's a left-hand pitcher, too. Has developed a hesitation to try to keep that runner close to first. And the other night, he pulled it. But if he's consistent with it, It's legal. And if that's part of his natural motion. The other night he pulled that, and the other team, Texas, Billy Hunter, blew out of the dugout, and he said, balk, balk, you know. But I think you're going to see more pitchers coming up with this little gimmick. It's like when somebody figures out how to beat a defense in football, they'll change the defense a little bit. And so I think now that that these pitchers who are having trouble holding guys on, you're going to see more and more of them going to the hesitation.
I can remember when you and I used to get together in the Twins press room up there, which is the finest, I think, in the big leagues. Great food and everything else you'd want and a nice environment. What do you recall about Rod Carew? Was anybody ever able to pitch successfully to this guy?
Bob, Rod Carew was such a natural hitter, and the Twins got him out of A-ball. He came right out of Orlando to the major leagues, made the All-Star team his rookie year, and he's been an All-Star ever since. Probably the greatest pure hitter since Ted Williams. I don't think there's, in fact, Ted Williams would probably tell you Rod is the greatest pure hitter of all time, because Rod does not swing for the fences. But on the other hand, if Rod needs to swing for the fences, he can hit you 18 or 20 home runs. And I know, you know, they say if a guy does that, he's going to sacrifice 40 or 50 points on his batting average. It costs Rod Carew. He's such a great hitter that if he goes for home runs and RBIs, and he drove in over 100 runs last year, and he's never been called on to do that before. But it really tells you what a great hitter he is. When Rod Carew started going for home runs and RBIs, his batting average dipped to what? 388? Something like that? 385, maybe 360, 364. He could. He might hit 400 if he were just going for Rod Carew. Period. But the guy, he plays the role that he has to play. He's a great hitter. He's a great competitor. I know the Twins have got to be disturbed, and the Twins fans have to be disturbed about his feeling about wanting to leave the team. But I think what Rod Carew is saying, Bob, is that I don't want to play for a loser. And any ball player that's satisfied playing with a loser, Don Money made this statement in Milwaukee last year, and people misunderstood. He said, I'm tired of playing for a loser. And then right away they picked it up and they said, Money says he wants to be traded. He said, I didn't say that. I said, I'm tired of playing for a loser. Let's get a winner. Let's build a winner. Let's do whatever it is. I want to play on a winning team.
Can't blame him for that.
Absolutely not. I don't want a guy around that likes to lose, you know.
Our guest today is an old friend. We've been on the sports trail together for many, many years. Merle Harmon, the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Merle, while we're talking about your days with the Minnesota Twins, I can remember another guy before he was hurt who had a great stroke up there, Tony Oliva.
Oh, Bob, one of the great, great hitters. My goodness. You know, Tony Oliva, if the knees hadn't gone, and he had knee surgery on each knee, I don't know, he's had 6-7 operations on those knees. I really feel for him. He has trouble walking. It's got to hurt him when he walks. And his knees, I think, you talk about someone whose legs are inverted. That's about the way his are today, because there's nothing there. What a great, great hitter. He'd still be playing today, no doubt about it. The perfect DH, wouldn't he be, if he still had legs?
For a left-handed hitter, he was the best left field hitter I think I ever saw.
Best bad ball hitter, too.
Yeah.
You know, where do you throw a guy that can, like you say, you can throw the ball low and away from him, almost in the dirt right off his ankles, and you don't know what he's going to do. Remember Vic Power, of course. You and I used to talk about Vic being a great bad ball hitter. They always said right down the middle of Vic Power was over his head, you know, up around his eyes or something like that. And that's where he'd really kill you. If you'd throw him down the middle, you might get him, because he just, you know, he was a bad ball hitter. But Oliva, unbelievable bat control, just unbelievable.
He certainly was great. What do you recall, or what do you have you heard from our old friend, a guy I was very fond of, Dean Chance? What a great pitcher he was.
Dean Chance, I saw, Bob, last year, and Dean went back to Ohio and bought a lot of farmland, but Dean got into the carnival business, believe it or not.
What happened to that jelly business he was in?
Well, that was, he was a good friend of the Smucker family.
That's it.
And he was in the jelly business, too, with one of the sons there. But Dean got into the car. Now, wouldn't you know that a guy like Dean Chance would get into the carny business? He has... maybe it's, you throw the baseballs at the milk bottles and win a Cupid doll or something. Well, he's got about 6 units out on the carnival circuit, and that's what he's doing now. But I miss the guy. He was something else, wasn't he?
Pool player.
Oh, yeah. He'd get you in a pool room. It was all over. Dean Chance, I'll never forget, Bob, pitched that final game in 1967 against Boston, the impossible dream year for the Red Sox when they went from ninth to first under Dick Williams, and had a bunch of rookies like Reggie Smith, you know, and guys like that that really carried the ball club. Jim Lomborg won that last game, and Dean Chance pitched that last game. And I've never felt so sorry for a guy. He had a great year with the Twins that year. He was a 20-game winner, and it was who won on Sunday. If the Twins won on Sunday, it was all over. They won the pennant. Boston did, of course. Dean Chance left that park in a fifth inning and went home. I just read the other day where Palmer got fined for going home. But on that last day of the season, Dean got out of there as fast as he could, brokenhearted. And I don't think anybody could have expected a guy pitching under such circumstances to stick around until the game was over.
In your opinion, with all that's happened and Heisel leaving and now Carew unhappy up there, is the Minnesota baseball franchise, is that in jeopardy?
I think it is, Bob. I think the Minnesota franchise is in very serious trouble. The Twin Cities, I don't think, are in serious trouble because that's a super, super sports market. And we should have Major League Baseball there. We should have everything Major League in the Twin Cities. But the Griffiths have an option, and they had an option in Washington. As dearly as they love Washington, they finally moved that franchise. Somebody is going to be in Denver next year, whether it's the Oakland A's or the Minnesota Twins. Minnesota could move to Denver a lot easier than Oakland can, apparently. Somebody will be in Denver. That's going to be the next super major league market, I think. And it would not surprise me if the Twins were not a candidate to go there.
What has happened with Congress's influence on the commissioner and that Washington franchise?
Well, Ted Turner may bail him out. Ted wants to have the Braves play a few games up there. I don't know, Bob. The National League has to expand eventually. I don't know if the National League really wants to go to Washington. I felt for a long time that a National League team might survive there, might do well. I think the most logical thing would, if they could get the Baltimore Orioles to do it, would have the Orioles play there like they're proposing having the Giants play in Oakland and San Francisco. To me, that would solve part of that situation if Baltimore played a half schedule in Washington. Because the Orioles, you know what their draw is. They have the greatest team in the world and they'd still draw 1,000,001. And they've had the greatest team in the world and drawn 1,000,001, which is not enough.
Was Bylevin pitching for the Twins when you were there?
No, he was, I'll tell you, he was a rookie, Bob, when I went to Milwaukee with the Brewers in 1970. And, I remember seeing some of the scouting reports on him. They said, this guy is going to be the next really big pitcher in the major leagues. And, you know, Bob, I still think he has the tools to do it. I don't know why he can't.
Well, to me, he's disappointing as Nolan Ryan is. Bylevin, they talk he's got the greatest curveball in baseball. He never can put a big year together. Now he's got that powerful Pittsburgh hitting behind him, and I think he's only won two games.
You know, Bob, you mentioned the curveball, and he has got a great one. And sometimes I think he throws too many breaking balls. I know Ray Fosse has been critical. Ray Fosse has not caught a game for us yet because he got hurt 2 days before we broke camp. And he'll be out all year. He just had surgery, by the way, on his knee a couple of days ago, and it was successful. But Fosse took a look at our pitching staff, and he said they're throwing too many breaking balls. He said everybody is curveball happy now. And he said the way these kids are throwing today and the way the fastballs jump and everybody can make them do tricks almost anymore, he said, I don't understand why the American League particularly is such a slap-happy breaking ball league. Now, Bob, remember 15, 20 years ago when it was the other way, the National League was a breaking ball league and the American League was the hard throwers. And the cycle has turned, and all of a sudden we've got all these kids throwing breaking balls. Larry Sorensen, who's a fine young pitcher with the Brewers, has lost three games throwing breaking balls. And so you got to have one. There's no doubt about it. But the question is, are they throwing too many? And I know one of the criticisms of Bylevin was he's too much in love with his curveball.
I think there's something to that. You know, I watched a very good friend of mine, one of the great pitchers, Vida Blue here. I went up to visit him at Wrigley Field. We were together at Oakland for a year. And that's one thing he doesn't do. He throws nothing but bullets. And in about the fifth inning, he threw his first curveball, bing, right back into center field for the first hit off him. But I see he won again the other night. He's really got great talent.
Oh, tremendous. And, you know, Bob, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Vida Blue. He came into the major leagues as a great kid, He became sour because of the situation in Oakland. He wouldn't speak to people. He went home to Louisiana. But this was not the real, I mean, put ourselves, any one of us, in his shoes. And we might do the same thing. But then he came back to Oakland, and he was the same super kid again. And I'll tell you, I'm tickled to death for him. I think he deserves the opportunity that he's getting now.
Well, I do, too. He's marvelous. I know that you've done a lot of Big Ten football, and I wondered and I wanted to ask you. Here in the Middle West, the football fans, sports people, are we over-evaluating Big Ten football, let's say Michigan and Ohio State? How do you account for their terrible record in the Rose Bowl?
Well, Bob, I think, unfortunately, and I was born and bred in the Big Ten in Southern Illinois, and I thought the Big Ten was sacred, and I'm very much involved in Big Ten athletics, both in football and basketball. But yeah, I think any time that you're so wrapped up in an area that you've lived in and you don't really get out to other areas like Southeast Conference, Southwest Conference, Pacific Coast Conference, and so forth, you have a tendency to overrate what you have and what you see consistently and don't see these other teams. Yeah, I think so. And I'll tell you something. I think that you're going to find this happening in the Big Ten. You're going to find more wide open offenses to combat what's going on in the Pacific Coast Conference because, well, back when they signed that Rose Bowl pact, it was the Big Ten that had the multiple offenses and drove those power teams on the coast crazy. Now the shoe's on the other foot. You've got the power teams, the ball control teams like Michigan and Ohio State, who get behind and can't play catch-up. The wide-open offenses can play catch-up. They can put two or three touchdowns on the scoreboard in a hurry, sometimes, not all the time. You're going to see, watch Michigan State. Watch Darrell Rogers in Michigan State. Watch Jim Young at Purdue. He's changed his whole philosophy on coaching. Why? Because he's probably got the greatest pure passer in America, Mark Herman.
I know that you've been very closely associated with Ohio State, and, of course, their great record speaks for itself. But I wonder how a guy like Woody Hayes, who's certainly knowledgeable, he's certainly successful, doesn't realize that it's a two-way game. You've got to throw the ball and run the ball, because if you can throw the ball, it makes your running more effective, as you know.
Prime example of Ohio State, a couple of years ago, they get behind, they couldn't catch up. They got in a bowl game and they couldn't catch up. They went to the Orange Bowl, they did catch up because they started, well, they came out. I know I had a game which was really a shocker with Ohio State. They threw the ball on the first down. The first down, went for the bomb. I mean, it just totally shook the whole stadium at Columbus. And they didn't make it, but they came right back, and on the next play, they did the same thing, and this time went all the way. I mean, and then went right back into their shell and played their ground game. I think Woody was trying to tell the people, hey, we can throw the ball too. But, Bob, they couldn't consistently. Now he has recruited a great, they say he's a, no, I said Mark Herman is the greatest pure passer in America. He probably is. Now they've recruited a kid out of Cincinnati, I think his name is Schlichter or Schlichty, something like that. And Woody Hayes promised that kid he would change his offense and put in the strong passing game if he'd come to Ohio State, and the kid did. And I think Woody will probably stick to his word, but Woody's got to find himself an offensive coach or a quarterback coach who can put an offense together to fit this guy.
What about all those tantrums that Woody Hayes throws? Is that an act?
Oh, I think it partly is, Bob. The only direct dealing I've ever had with Woody Hayes was a lot of years ago. I mean, direct dealing. I'm talking about the whole weekend. And he was just super. And so, now, maybe a week later, he would have knocked me all over the place. I don't know. But yeah, I think it's an act. I've watched him recruit, and I'll tell you, he is sensational. I wish I could do a dialect, but I sat in a Holiday Inn in Columbus one year in early March when they had the high school kids coming in. And right at the next table was Woody Hayes. And he's got this one kid here that he is trying to sell on Ohio State. And almost right on cue, big John Hicks walks in. The coach says, John, come on over. I'd like to have you meet Sammy Smith, or what his name is. That kid's eyes got that big. And then he goes in, now, Sammy, if you come to Ohio State, we're going to make sure you get a good education. And that's the fatherly Woody Hayes talking. He's great. He's great.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the country's top sports announcers, Merle Harmon, the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers. And we'll be back with our guest in a moment. We're delighted to have Merle Harmon as our guest today. He and I were on the beat together for a long time. You know, I had the great pleasure of talking with Bill Stern's wife on the phone the other day. He was one of the great guys in our profession. I really loved that guy. He died here a couple of years ago, but you remember his show every night on network.
Oh, yes.
And he used to tell stories about people who had died years, and you couldn't catch him up on it, like he said that Abraham Lincoln was the wrestling champion of the state of Illinois.
Well, you know, Bob, he was, I think Bill Stern, now he's been criticized a lot for his, or was, for his approach, but I think Bill Stern taught us all that broadcasting and sports are really show business too, and there's a lot of show business in it. And I really admired him. I'm like you.
Yeah, I thought he was great. And I love Mac Demme and I love Ted Husing. I worked a series with each one of those guys. And they were the great pioneers. They did it without eight guys with them and an advertising agency and all that. You know, for 15 years, I carried my briefcase. I had nobody with me but the briefcase.
Yes, and those doubleheaders could get tough, couldn't they?
They'd really get rough. Anyway, it's been a real pleasure having you as a guest on our show. I've always admired your work, and we've had some good times together. And I wish you and the Milwaukee Brewers all the good luck in the world. Great to see you looking so well.
Thank you, Bob. It's great to be with you. I really have enjoyed this, and I love to talk sports with you because of all the great things that you've covered.
It.
Oh, yeah, super business.
Merle Harmon, the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers. What about off-track betting? Next week, our guest is going to be Joe Joyce, one of the best informed men in horse racing. He is the general manager of Arlington Park Racetrack. So remember that next Sunday. Well, have a happy, happy Mother's Day, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you again next Sunday at the usual time.